I was just at Podcast Movement Evolutions, a podcast listener, came up to me, we had a great conversation, and then he said, can I give you some feedback on the show? And I said, absolutely. And he said, one thing that kind of turns me off is...
I wish the episodes were shorter.
It feels like work.
The clips at the beginning feel manipulative and unnecessarily slick.
I listen to podcasts to get away from work. This is a work topic for me.
The thing feels more like a science experiment than true connection.
I choose the most interesting topics in my feed.
Yep.
Sometimes I choose your podcast. Sometimes I choose other podcasts.
I want it to be shorter and more actionable and more concise.
The other danger here is that you listen to one complainer and then there's a silent majority who actually loves that thing. And then you remove it and then they're like, what happened? So Jeremy, I've got a question for you. When I decided to team up with you, one of the thoughts in my head was, Jeremy has this big email list specifically focused on podcasting. I think you've got like 9,000 subscribers or something like that. And you've like regularly emailed people about our episodes. But when I look at our podcasting stats, we're only getting like 350 downloads per episode.
It's funny you mentioned this because I actually had the same idea when I signed up. I don't know how many people are on Transistor's email list, but I imagine it's more than 9,000 actually. But, you know, this is something that I've actually been curious about myself. And this show is about podcast marketing and podcast growth. My newsletter is about podcast marketing and podcast growth. So I kind of assumed, okay, we've got 9,000 people here who want this topic. They have already kind of indicated that they like my take on it by staying subscribed. So, you know, I was kind of thinking it would be pretty easy moving everybody over. And it hasn't really worked out that way so far. So I got curious the other week and I ran a bit of an experiment to try and get to the bottom of this mystery.
Okay.
To see why haven't you listened to the podcast yet? And I had a few hypotheses, a few ideas about why that might be. And we actually were able to get about 100 people responded to my little ad hoc survey and got some interesting data that I think is going to shine a light on, you know, this phenomenon exists for everyone in a lot of cases where maybe you've built up an audience on social media or your newsletter or on YouTube, and you're trying to get people to back the podcast and you're like, why are you not doing the thing? So we're going to dig into that data today and try and get to the bottom of this kind of frustration that I know a lot of us as creators have. Now, before we get into it, I am just curious about you. Are there creators who you are personally putting through this agony by engaging with their content somewhere, but not listening to their podcast, or maybe vice versa?
Jeremy, give me a break. It's like every creator has a newsletter and a YouTube channel and a podcast and a Twitter and a Instagram, and I can't subscribe to everybody's everything. Yeah, I mean, there's some people, it's like I like their podcast and I listen to their podcast, but I'm sure they have a newsletter and I'm not on it. There's people I've tried as well where I really dig their newsletter and they've got a podcast and I'm like, okay, I'm going to like try this out, but it's just not the same. Like for whatever reason, it doesn't fit into my life in the same way. And so as a consumer, I kind of have to make a choice.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm the same way. And I find myself, there have been seasons in my life where I will listen to a show for years at a time. And then sometimes it just drops off entirely. And I'm still a fan at heart. I know I think of it as still one of my favorite shows. And it's almost like I'll have this reality check moment where I'm like, wait, I haven't actually listened in 3 years. And yet I still think of this as one of my favorite shows. And 20,000 Hertz is one of these shows for me. I think of 99% Invisible. That's a show I still listen to a couple times a year. But in my mind, it's like, I'm like, this is one of the best podcasts ever. And yet it's there in my feed every week. I get the new notifications for it and I don't listen, even though I'm interested in the topic. And it's kind of just fallen out of this bubble of like, I have maybe two shows that I listen to every single week. And it's like, these are my must listen shows. And a lot of times I'll discover a show and I'll go back and binge through the whole back catalog. And then I get to the end and there's nothing new. And that slot gets lost. So now maybe I do listen to that every week, but now something new slots in there. Or sometimes like the most recent one for me was the show I Will Teach You to Be Rich by Ramit Sethi. And I binged through all, I don't know, 150 episodes or something like that about 3 months ago. And within a month or two, I listened to all the episodes because I was like in the mindset where like, okay, I'm like focused on personal finances and my partner Kelly and I, we got engaged. And so we're going to be married and the show is all about like couples finances. So I'm like, okay, I'm like doing the research and like looking for all the potential pitfalls. And so I wanted to just soak in that. And then I got caught up and I haven't listened to a single episode since.
See, one of the questions in our outline is, what are the creators doing to facilitate more connection?
Mm-hmm.
But there's this other side of the equation, which is, what is the job to be done of the listener?
Yeah.
And as I was listening to you, I was thinking, like, you know, when Jeremy's listening to this personal finance podcast, and I'm not sure if people heard that, but you just got engaged.
Yep.
We all need to celebrate that. Congrats. Confetti everywhere. So happy for you and Kelly. But there's a job to be done there. It's like, I'm about to take this giant step, one of the biggest financial steps mm-hmm. you can take too. So you had this job to be done, which pulled you into the Ramit Sethi ecosystem. And the job to be done here was, I need to figure this out because this big thing's happening.
Yeah.
And it was triggered by an event in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is how a lot of people listen to podcasts. I think when you view it through that lens, this job to be done lens, and understanding that listeners aren't just showing up to appease you and give you more downloads so that yep. you can be happy. Listeners have jobs that they need done in their lives, and they are looking for ways to get those jobs done. And that might mean they're going to be with you for a set amount of time. And in the case of this show, you know, we know that people who are listening to the show, and it's reflected in the data we're going to go through, they are trying to achieve something.
Yep.
And they've got X number of hours per week to invest in research and learning. And they could give that to us. They could give that to a blog. They could give that to your newsletter. They could give that to a course. There's all sorts of ways they can invest that time. And once they're done that job, they may move on
yep.
and be like, you know what? I only needed 3 episodes of that podcast. I'm good. Now I'm moving on to the next thing.
Yeah. And I think that that correlates with one of my personal experiences as a consumer, where I think of somebody like our mutual friend, Jay Klaus, where I was a binge listener of his show, and I listened through every single episode of that show for the first 30 or 40 or something like that. And now I am a occasional selective listener, where the topic really needs to grab me. But what was actually the moment of transition was when I actually signed up to Jay's paid community. And now that job is being done in a higher resolution by actually getting direct access to Jay. And so I don't really need the podcast anymore. And I think that one of the interesting issues with educational podcasts, and I think Jay's actually a good example of this, is his premise of the show is to help creators become professional creators, essentially. And so he covers a variety of topics. He'll talk about LinkedIn and podcasting and YouTube and all these other things, running live events, all these things that might be relevant to different creators. And when you get to a certain level of advancement, any audience reaches this level where they kind of know what path they're on and they actually want to tune out all the noise. And so I think that this is kind of one of the pitfalls of being successful, is when you help your audience achieve the goal, it's likely that they are actually not going to engage with your show as much anymore, especially if you're doing a breadth of content. And I think that there are interesting ways around this to some extent. I think you can, if you think about the job to be done of the different assets in your content ecosystem, that sometimes the podcast can really complement other areas. And so one of the things that one of my newsletter subscribers in this experiment we're going to talk about mentioned was that they're actually a member of my paid community and work with me as a client, but the podcast offers a different thing than they get from the one-to-one, and especially the roasts. And so I think that you can design certain types of shows depending on what your business is, depending on what your goals are, that it can still be relevant longer term. Whereas I think if you're just trying to like teach somebody the thing so they can be successful, oftentimes like that has a very limited shelf life, and we almost need to expect this as creators.
Yeah. And maybe just to kind of wrap that up, there's also a question of, what job is this podcast doing for you as a creator?
Yep.
And so if it's in service of getting people to a certain point so that they then need the next step, which might be your course or your membership or becoming a customer or becoming a client, that could be that, oh, the podcast is just stage one, and then people graduate from the podcast and go to the next thing. And as long as that graduation is happening, the podcast is doing its job. It might mean that your downloads per episode doesn't grow over time, but as long as you're getting new listeners who come through the program and then graduate to something else that you're offering, then the podcast is doing its job. You don't need 100,000 listeners per episode.
Yeah. And the other thing that's interesting, I think with that, like, what's the job of the podcast for you? Like, I think about this with my newsletter, where this it was totally unintentional, but has been this great happy accident where I treat that newsletter as my workshop for new ideas. And so before anything ever gets taught in a course, a very structured format, it comes out as a newsletter idea. And so one of the great things is that whenever we do our like weekly office hours calls, my favorite thing is when one of my clients or members of the community will say, hey, you wrote about this thing in the newsletter. Can we talk about that in more depth? And I'm like, oh, yeah, because I've been thinking about that and I just published it. And now there's this opportunity to like, okay, I put this out there. Now I actually get to have a conversation about it and go even deeper. And so the newsletter really serves the community. It makes the community better, as well as serving the broader audience. And I think that podcasts can do that as well. And I know I've worked with a couple of clients in the past who were kind of very niche coaches. And one client in particular, her podcast, the whole basic premise was to answer questions from her paid membership. And it was open to the public because they were relevant to her audience. But really, she was like, okay, I know more people than just this one client in my community have this question. So I'm just going to address it on the podcast and I'm going to make it public. And so that was this way where the podcast could keep serving the community as well as both attracting people to it in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. I think podcasts can do all sorts of jobs for creators. And so thinking about both sides, I think, is important. But I think what you've done with your audience in actually running this survey is so brilliant, and more creators, more brands, more companies should be doing this, where if you have a big newsletter list, send your newsletter a survey and say, hey, how come you are listening or aren't listening to this podcast we have going?
Yeah.
So yeah, do you want to talk about that? What did you discover in there?
Yeah, so I'll give the setup first. And so essentially what inspired this was, if for anybody who's done a course or product launch or something like that, a why didn't you buy survey. And so after your launch wraps up, you send out an email to everybody who didn't buy and you say, hey, why didn't you buy? And you ask, you know, it might be multiple choice, it might be open-ended, but you might say like, was the price was too expensive or the timing wasn't right, or there might be other reasons that people didn't buy. And a lot of times what happens is that you surface all these objections and you realize, oh, I didn't communicate this really core thing, that people didn't consider this because I didn't include something in my messaging. And so I was kind of thinking, every so often, it would be worthwhile to do this to your email newsletter and set it up the same way. And so essentially what I did, I sent out a dedicated email and I said, you signed up for this newsletter because you want this. I also have a podcast that does a version of this. So essentially click the link, which one best describes you. And the first link was, I've listened to nearly every episode of the podcast. The second one is, I've clicked play on one episode, but haven't listened to most episodes. And the third one was, I've never clicked play on a single episode. And after they clicked one of those links, they got redirected to a different kind of supplemental survey that each had a follow-up two or three questions just to get some more kind of long-form data based on whether they were regular listeners, casual or samplers, I kind of define them, or non-listeners. And so we got 100 people who clicked through the link, and we got a bunch of really interesting data back from people. A lot of it was what I suspected or had some hypotheses around, but there was also some really interesting kind of anecdotal long form answers that came out of it. And I want to highlight a few of those things, but first I'll just kind of quickly run through the numbers here from a high level perspective.
Okay.
So we had 94 people respond in total. 30 of those people, so 32%, were regular listeners to the show. So they listened to most episodes. 42 people, so that was 45%, had clicked play on one episode, but hadn't listened to the majority. And then 22 people had never listened to an episode at all. And that was 23%. And so this is a little bit of an interesting data set, because by virtue of them actually responding, they're already more engaged subscribers or audience members than typical. And so this is not representative of my total email newsletter. Like, obviously the vast majority of people have not listened. And I kind of did some really, really, really rough math to try and understand, like, okay, what would I guess? If I was to look at my total audience here, I kind of extrapolated some of this out based on what I know. And basically what we can see from some of our data here is that we probably have around 200 people are probably regular listeners, I would say. I think some of the people who fall into the sampler category, it's probably around 2,500 people. And then non-listeners on my email list are probably around 5,800. And so that would be almost 70% of people have never listened to an episode. 30% of people have probably sampled an episode, and 2.4% of people are regular listeners. So that's the kind of breakdown here based on this, like, really, really impossible to get 100% accurate math from the survey.
One thought I just had while you were talking through those numbers is that it shows you actually that a podcast listener is generally at the end of a funnel.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the top of your funnel is your entire blog and social media presence and LinkedIn posts and all that. And then that filters down to your mailing list.
Mm-hmm.
And then your mailing list filters down to podcast listeners.
Yeah.
And generally, what's true is the bigger the top of that funnel, the more people you're getting in at the top of that funnel, the more people you'll get at the bottom. You're only going to convert X percentage to, in our case, a podcast listener.
Yeah.
And in our case, there's a ceiling to the total addressable market.
Yeah.
So the total number of people who are interested in what we're talking about is limited.
Yeah.
It's been estimated that even though there's like 5 million or 4.5 million podcasts, only about 150,000 to 200,000 of those are active shows. That's across every type of show.
Yeah.
That's actually a very small market. It's like maybe 200,000 people.
Yeah.
Well, if that's true, how many of those people across all shows, across all types of creators, across all stage of life are interested in podcast marketing just in general?
Mm-hmm.
And then we are have been focused on a specific type of podcast marketing.
Yep.
We don't focus that much on, for example, fictional shows
yep.
or limited run series or documentary shows. And so the total addressable market's even smaller. And then it's like, how many of that group want to hear from us specifically? And it's right. even a smaller number. So it's going to change depending on what your market is. If your market is first-time home buyers, that might be massive, right?
Yeah.
There might be many more people. If it's people who have ever watched an episode of Seinfeld, well, that's millions, maybe even in the hundreds of millions of people.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that makes me think of when we're thinking about, okay, we've got this limited supply of people, the sad reality, which is true for every podcast, is that, oh man, let's just say that 2,500 people have listened to an episode, but only 200 of them actually stuck around. That to me says like, oh, okay, we can do more. We got the impressions. It wasn't exposure isn't the sole problem here. Like mm-hmm. we've got this group of people that we have convinced to click play on an episode, and the yeah. vast majority of those didn't come back or only listen to one or two episodes. And so I mm-hmm. think that this is where, you know, if your show is not, if it has a low retention rate, you're going to have to work so hard and get so much exposure. It's going to be just this tiny, tiny trickle down at the bottom of people who actually stick around. That this is why actually focusing on the quality of the product and the show is so important, because it's more efficient, the exposure that you do get in the long run.
Absolutely. I think that's the other side of the coin is now, okay, we had 2,500 people try this us out. What could we have done to actually retain those as regular listeners? And what can we still do to convince yeah. them to give the show another shot?
And I think that actually we're going to go through these three different categories, the regular listeners, the samplers, and the non-listeners in more depth here. But I think that there are some clues that they have actually told us potentially what we could do or why they are not coming back. So we're going to get to those in a second here. But let's start off with the regular listeners. And so these are the people who listen to most, if not all, episodes. And so this was 30 people who responded to the survey, and they listened to most of the episodes. And there was a bunch of interesting kind of responses that they had. And so one of the things that I asked was, once they clicked that link, the first question was like, okay, out of curiosity, like what actually attracted you to the show in the first place? And one of the things that really came up again and again, and we've seen this in our Apple Podcast reviews as well, is the data-driven approach, which was a natural premise and concept for us, because this was kind of a show that was conceived on the back of the actual Podcast Marketing Trends report. And so, of course, it was always going to be kind of tied to data. But I was kind of surprised at how resonant that's been for people, and how many people in their reviews have said, like, unlike other shows, which just feel too wishy-washy or too based on feel, this feels like real and concrete and solid. And that really stood out to me, because that came up in a number of responses of what attracted people in the first place.
I think what's also interesting is, as we get to the data of like samplers and non-listeners, sometimes what attracts people and keeps them listening is what other people don't like.
Yeah.
And so as a creator, this is like sometimes maddening.
Yeah.
Which is like, what do I do with this information? And in some ways, you want to listen more to the people who are engaged than the people who haven't taken any action. And so of all the data you collected, this is actually the one I'm thinking about the most. Mm-hmm. What could we amplify? What could we augment? What could we tighten up that these people appreciate? Because we kind of want to find more people like this, people willing to put in the effort to listen to an episode and stay committed week after week.
Yeah. I think the other thing that really stood out to me from there, so the questions I asked were, you know, what attracted you to the show in the first place? What keeps you coming back? And then what do you get from this show that you don't get elsewhere? And in this one, that data-driven approach showed up in answers to all of those questions. So that was kind of interesting. But one of the other really common responses here, first of all, is about me because this was my newsletter. And so people mm-hmm. said, oh, I've like subscribed to your newsletter and I really like your thoughts on things. So when you had the podcast, it was a natural thing. But then what keeps people coming back is now people may have not been aware of you, but the co-host dynamic came up a lot of times. I'm like, I really like Jeremy and Justin's vibe. I really like the co-host dynamic. And so that was another interesting kind of thread where I know we've talked about this before too, where people will check out a show for the topic a lot of times, but they keep coming back because they like the host dynamic. And I know that this is something we talk about relationships a lot here, but you mm-hmm. know, both of us had the advantage with this show of having been in podcasting for a while, having built up a reputation and an audience that was then able to move them over into the show when it launched. So that was an easier mm-hmm. sell to those people.
Yeah, I think this is the relationship factor is underrated. The truth is that often someone becoming a podcast listener is like the culmination of a relationship that's been building with the host over time. And so that could mean your activity in an industry, your profile in a certain culture, your blogging, your newsletter, your tweets, your LinkedIn posts. People kind of begin to date you somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And then eventually the relationship gets serious enough that they're willing to commit to having you in their earbuds every week. And so that's notable. You know, a lot of people mentioned specifically they love your newsletter, so it made sense that they might like your podcast. A lot of people like your approach, so it makes sense that they would like your podcast. And sometimes I think folks have not yet earned the right to have a regular listener. Mm-hmm. It just takes time. Like, let's say you have an industry podcast, but you're brand new to that industry. You need to earn the right to be heard.
Yep.
And that might take some time. And you can get there different ways. You know, maybe you can get there through interview podcast and building rapport through other people's profile in an industry. But I think if folks do this survey themselves, they will see some of this reflected.
Yeah, and that's really interesting. In the question of what keeps you coming back, my favorite response here was, you keep being interesting. And I thought, like, at first I was like, that's a really funny, like, terse response. But I saw more responses that were similar to this. Somebody else said, I keep learning something new. And that was this kind of idea that came up a number of times in this question, what keeps you coming back? And so there's this idea of earning the right to have an ongoing listener, but there's also the idea that you can't coast on that every episode out, you need to re-earn that trust to get them to come back to the next episode. And so to me, these responses here are saying, like, they're not just going to keep coming back indefinitely. It's the fact that they keep listening to the show, and more often than not, when they do, they walk away with something interesting to them. And when that stops to happen, they're going to stop listening, which is what any of us would do for any product subscription that we subscribe to. Netflix stops coming out with interesting shows. That's being cut from our bill. And the same thing is with free podcasts, newsletters, blog posts, social media follows, all of this.
Yeah. It's easy to almost like rest and get complacent. Like, you know, these people are going to listen to me no matter what I put out. And I mean, podcasts can sometimes feel like this, like, oh, I got to put out another episode this week. What can I wrangle together to, you know, just get out on the feed. And it's, you know, we are serving the listener with something. And again, going back to that job to be done, what's the job to be done here?
To your point about, you know, that feeling that we all have of like, the guest canceled or whatever, do I just cobble something together this week? I am increasingly skeptical of that form of consistency. I think consistency is important of release schedule, but I think the consistency and outcome or listener experience has to be high as well. And I think that when you start putting out something that doesn't meet the bar, I think that that has a subtle but very real negative impact on somebody's perception of the show. And it's, you know, we're all going to have an off episode here and there. But I think when that starts to happen too often, it doesn't really take long for people to start dropping off. And I think that this is something that I think more people probably, if you're in a funk that week or a guest cancels, I might even put out a 1 minute episode just as a note saying, hey guys, this happened. I'm going to be skipping an episode this week, but don't worry, I'll be back with a brand new one next week. I think that's actually a preferable listener experience where you're not getting this like, where's the episode? Where's the episode? Why isn't it in my feed? You've actually communicated with them. You can take that episode down later, but you've also said, I didn't have anything that was worth publishing this week. And so I'm going to save it until I have something that is. And I think that that preserves your reputation as somebody who has a high bar for quality and what you share with listeners, which is more important than just being there every single week.
I've had a hard time with this too, especially with guest-driven shows, of caring so much about the listener's time and attention that if the guest is not good, having the guts to say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to release this episode. It just doesn't meet our bar for, you know, what our listeners expect. And that's hard to do. But I think it's worth doing. And we've done this with this show. We've recorded an entire episode. And then you and I are kind of sitting there going, I just don't think that hit the bar. And then we've re-recorded it, which is painful, but worth doing if you really value the listener's time and attention.
All right. So let's move on to the samplers here next and dig into some of the responses from them. And so again, this was 42 out of the 94 respondents. So 45% of people. This was the biggest group. So from the people who responded to the survey, the largest number of people had listened to at least one episode, but were not regular listeners. And I actually asked as a follow-up question, you know, how many episodes had you actually listened to? What was your experience with the show? And so out of these 42 people, 43%, and so it was 18 people, had listened to a few episodes. So they'd maybe listened to two or three or four episodes, but not the, you know, 15 that we'd published at that time. 31%, so that was 13 people, had finished one episode, but not come back for a second. And then 11 people, that was 26%, had started one episode, but not even finished it. So 26% started, but not finished. 31% had finished one episode. 43% had finished multiple episodes. So that was interesting to me that the largest group actually was had listened to a few episodes. So these were kind of this, they straddled the line between being regular listeners, but they weren't quite. And then there were people who listened one episode or not even one episode, and it just didn't grab them. And so there's a spectrum within a spectrum here within just this segment of listeners, which was the first kind of interesting thing here.
Yeah, I'm just looking at these responses. Some of this is even a little bit spicy, but I kind of like love it. I think you need to start to love critical feedback.
Yep.
And there's something in here that really kind of inspires me and gives me ideas on how, you know, we can make this show better or do a different show that targets some of these pain points. So,
I want to get to what stood out to you in a second, but there's one other kind of quantitative question that I asked. And so for this group of people who had listened to Click Play on at least one episode, but not listened regularly, I asked, you know, what's keeping you from listening more? And what was just the overwhelming majority here was 55% of people said lack of time. And then the next closest was 10% of people said it just wasn't specifically relevant to me. And then 7% of people said it just didn't grab me for whatever. It is relevant to me, but, you know, something about the delivery, the hosts, whatever, it didn't grab me. So time was the big one. And we're going to see that again in the non-listeners, that with the people who were not regular listeners, time was the biggest factor, which was interesting. And there's actually some interesting anecdotal spins on that and elaborations. But you mentioned some spicy kind of takes in this samplers category. Yeah. What kind of stood out to you here as you were reading through this?
What keeps you from listening more? It feels like work sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That. And then here's another one. I listen to podcasts to get away from work. This is a work topic for me.
Yeah.
So there's something about that in particular that I just find so interesting.
Yep.
Because remember, podcasts do different jobs for people in their lives. And so if someone's normal podcast listening time is when they get home and they've like thrown off all their work clothes and they finally get to walk the dog, do they want to get back into work mode?
Yep.
Like, do they want us to stress them out with all the things they could be doing about their podcast? It's like, no, I don't want something that feels like work in that mode. And so that's interesting. But it also makes me think like, I wonder how we could shape the show to address that. Is there creative ways we could reach the people to make the show feel less like work, or to start another show that doesn't feel as much like work, right?
Yeah.
And again, this show has a lot of data in it, and a lot of the people that listen to the show like the data. But maybe by including all this data and then the discussion around it, it just makes the show longer, mm-hmm. makes it feel more like work. Maybe these audiences are mutually exclusive. And so that's interesting too, just to look at this stuff and go,
Yeah, I think that one was really interesting. And I know that I've experienced this with different shows and different content where when the topic at hand is part of your job, and I think this can be done, but I think it's hard to do well, to have a casual, low stakes conversation that doesn't feel worky, but is about work. That to me too, it feels like, do people want that? If they're just going to get something casual, do they want to just tune out of work entirely? But then I think we also have all had the experience where it is nice to go out with people in your industry for drinks, or like a happy hour in your industry with people who get the context that you live in, but you're not really talking deep about that. So I think there is value there, but you kind of have to pick a lane. And where we're going more for the actionable, like explaining the data, like this is, we want this to be really useful to people in that way. And so that's the job to be done, which actually, ironically, in the non-listener group, so they don't even know what the show is about necessarily, but also here in the sampler, a lot of people started to say, I want it to be shorter and more actionable and more concise. And so in our mind, we're kind of giving an actionable show, but it's not actionable enough for some people, which is fascinating.
Yeah. And what I like about this feedback is it inspires new ideas. So it does make me think, like we could do another feed where we get, you know, Chris, our editor, to just like pull out like the actionable tips. And it's just like, here's the feed with just the 10, 15 minutes of tips, if that's all you want. That would be an interesting experiment and wouldn't cost us that much more because we've already, you know, edited the content once. We could just grab it and try another experiment there. It also makes me think about, there are some universal kind of human truths that I think are more compelling more of the time. So telling a story or involving your listeners on a journey is a much different format than doing kind of a data-driven show or an advice-driven show or a tips-driven show. We've talked about doing a completely different show where we try to make a show popular. So like pick a podcast that we think has potential, you know, and it's like, hey, everybody, this is Justin and Jeremy, and we are trying to get Allison's podcast to 10,000 downloads per month. Join us every week as we give her actionable feedback. Well, that's a journey, and that might be more interesting and feel less like work. Because in that case, it's like, oh, wow, like, I wonder what happens next. Did they, like, you know, they were trying this crazy experiment. How did it go? So I like the inspirational stuff that comes out of this kind of feedback. And again, you're not going to be able to do every idea, but it's like a nice time to consider other opportunities, either for the show you're doing right now or a spinoff that might be even more compelling to a bigger audience.
Yeah. I think the other thing that stood out to me here is that at this stage, one of the questions that I asked was, is there anything we could do with the show that would get you to listen more? And so we're essentially asking for advice. And I knew going in that this is a untrustworthy response. And so you get this a lot of times with pricing and things like that. People go down rabbit holes where they're like, you know, what would you pay for this? And this is actually a terrible question to ask people to suss out pricing. And there's all kinds of actual more rigorous pricing methodologies out there. But we started getting people saying like, I wish the episodes were shorter. But then there was this fascinating response here where somebody said, I loved your longer or shorter episode experiment. And so this was the experiment we ran previously where for a couple episodes, we did like an hour long version and a 40 minute version or a 35 minute version, and basically said, listen to whichever one you want, and kind of tried to measure the results. And this person said, so I love that experiment. I picked the longer episode to listen to because I didn't want to miss any useful content. But so far, I've only listened to it for about 30% because my business podcast listening time is limited. Not sure whether that's a vote in favor of the longer or shorter episodes. Maybe a vote in favor of shorter, but just as meaty. And so there's this tension here where people say they want shorter, but the show might just not be enough of a priority for them to listen at any length. And so I've seen this a lot with a lot of shows where people see that their episode consumption is too low for their taste, or they're getting feedback that people wish it was shorter. You make the change and it doesn't change anything. And it's because for those people, they're trying to convince themselves to listen. Like they do want to listen, but it's just not enough of a priority to actually get themselves to do it. And so their kind of verbal feedback to you, you can't really take that at face value, and you kind of have to do your own experiments and then measure the results and see what do people actually take action on.
I still think some of those insights are interesting. Like this person said, I choose the most interesting topics in my feed when I set off on my dog walk commute. Yep. Sometimes I choose your podcast. Sometimes I choose other podcasts. That's just true. That is an observable truth about how I consume podcast episodes, how you consume podcast episodes. Regular podcast listeners, you wake up in the morning, it's like, oh, I'm walking down to the office. What grabs my attention? Mm-hmm. And I've got 30, 40 episodes I could choose from.
Yep.
So if that's true, then there are some things you could do, right? Like make sure that you're releasing the most compelling topic, episode title, episode cover art, episode description, first 30 seconds that you can, so that you increase the chances that when someone's skimming through episodes to listen to, they might choose yours. I also just think I like having that in mind, like as a background. Sometimes as creators, it's like, man, how come no one's listening to my show? Like, come on, I'm doing all this work. And it's like, yeah, but let's actually look at how people choose episodes to listen to. And if you're not regularly fitting into that slot, then you're going to have a hit rate that's like maybe 15% of the time they choose you.
Yeah.
If you want to increase the hit rate, you're going to have to do some things. Or maybe your topic, maybe your concept, that's just what you're going to get.
Yeah. The other thing on the picking the most interesting episode in the feed, we actually had a number of people who mentioned this. And so the final question here for this group was, anything else you'd like to share about the show that might help us improve? And a lot of people didn't actually offer constructive advice. They actually offered praise. And so there was a number of people here who said, I appreciate how clear the episode titles are, that so it helps me choose whether this is relevant to me. And this is something that, you know, we talk a lot about in the roasts, of having like not just a hook, but just clarity in the title. What are you going to get out of this? If you have this question in your mind, and this was actually something else that people mentioned a lot in the previous category of regular listeners, this idea of, I keep coming back because I'm glad to hear that Jeremy and Justin are asking the same questions that I'm asking myself, and I didn't know if other people were thinking about these things. And so I think that this, with episode titling and descriptions, this came up a lot for people too, which is really affirming to me that I'm like, okay, I haven't been entirely missing the mark with the titles here. And, you know, I spend a decent amount of time workshopping a few different titles. And oftentimes I'll actually, the day we publish, I'm like, that's not quite right. And then 2 days later, I'm like, that's the title. And I'll go back and change it because everybody else who comes through later, like, they'll now benefit from that. And so I think like, you might not get it right the first time, but improving the overall clarity and kind of legibility of your feed so that somebody who's new can quickly find something that is relevant to them, that's going to increase both new listener acquisition, but also this kind of sampler group, help them get more touch points with the show by finding something regular and starting to build the habit around that.
I also want to point out one thing, talking about episode titles. This person says, I haven't had the mental space for more information. I'm feeling quite overloaded with business and personal stuff. Mm-hmm. As soon as I read that, I instantly was like, that would be an amazing episode title and concept for a show. Feeling overloaded with business and personal stuff? Listen to this. Yep. And these surveys are so good at surfacing those kind of topics.
Yeah. There was a spin on that that came up a number of times in this segment as well, where there was a lot of people who had listened to one episode. And I think there were some people in the non-listener segment as well, where they basically told us like, this is in my queue, but I've got other stuff. I'm feeling too overloaded right now, but I want to listen. It's on my queue. I'm going to come back. Mm-hmm. And I think we have our existing audiences who are interested in the topic. And there's this kind of slow permeation of a show throughout that audience where people, like I mentioned before with my own consumption habits, where it's like, I'll go through a feed and then now there's a slot 3 months later. It's like, okay, what have I been waiting to listen to binge through that now is going to fill that slot? And I think that a lot of people, when you give up too early, you don't actually, like, your podcast would grow to saturate more of your existing audience, but it's going to take months or years to like fully propagate. And obviously there's always new people coming in who are kind of starting afresh. And so I think people are here are telling us, like, the show is interesting to me. It's not the top priority right now, but I do want to listen. I like what you're doing. I like the newsletter and I want to listen to this. And it's just the timing's not right. And so that exists for everyone as well. With everybody's audience, like, you have people who like your show. They've already made the purchase, so to speak, in their mind. And it's just like, mm-hmm. they're waiting for the right time, the right offer, the right episode to come along.
Yeah. They're waiting for a big road trip, or they're waiting for an airplane ride or something. Sometimes you just need to wait for the right time to come up for that listener.
All right. The last one that I wanted to mention before we move on to the non-listener segment is this one that said, the clips at the beginning feel manipulative and unnecessarily slick. The thing feels more like a science experiment than true connection. And I thought this was such a fascinating differing of tastes, where I think we've got a lot of feedback from listeners who really feel connected to us and like the experiments. And as you mentioned before, you can't satisfy every audience. And this person, it feels too over the top, too much. And there's always going to be that. And I think that mm-hmm. you can go get yourself into trouble by taking all advice as equal. And so you kind of mentioned that before about having some discernment about who are you actually listening to.
Yeah, I mean, because the other danger here is that you listen to one complainer and then there's a silent majority who actually loves that thing. And yep. then you remove it and then they're like, what happened? Like, I loved that section of your show. And you're like, well, one person complained. It's like, well, no, just contextualize all of this stuff. And eventually you're going to have to develop your own sense of taste about mm-hmm. what is good or yep. what you feel is good, and then stick to your guns. I'm sure Ira Glass gets people giving him advice all the time on how to make his show better, but he has the confidence in his taste to go, okay, that's nice. I understand you want me to put more air horns in my intros, but I'm not going to do that.
All right, so let's move on to the last segment here, which was the non-listeners. This was 22 people who were non-listeners, and I asked them, why hadn't you listened to the show yet? And here, again, the most common response, 45% of this group, was lack of time. And so this, again, kind of signifies like, oh, I'm interested in the show, I'm interested in the topic, I just don't have time to do it, which is a good sign to some extent. The next highest group was that they didn't know it existed. And this, to me, is a fascinating insight, that 32% of people who had not listened didn't even know the show existed. They're engaged enough with the newsletter to take this survey, but they didn't know the podcast existed. And I suspect that everybody's audience has a similar group of people. And you hear this, I've heard this anecdotally from so many people who you do a post on social media or you talk to an audience member on a phone call and you mention the podcast and they're like, oh, I didn't know you had a podcast. And you're like, I post about it like 6 times a week. Like, how can anybody not know? And that group always exists. And I think we as creators tend to pull back from promoting typically as much as we could. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I've personally gotten over that hurdle for the most part, especially because the podcast is not paid and I'm really proud of it. So I feel happy to promote it. But reading some of these responses and seeing that number of people who didn't know it existed, it made me think, I realize some areas where I've not made this as clear as it could be, both that the podcast exists and also the links. People mentioned some links to listen, even though I thought it was obvious as the writer of my newsletter, and people were saying like, link to the audio players. And I'm like, I do link to the audio players right above the YouTube video link. And, but I don't have the buttons or anything like that. And so there's some ideas where I was like, I could be doing more to make it easier for people from a kind of like user interface perspective.
And trying different things out, like maybe trying a newsletter where it's just like super clear, like over the top, like with pointy arrows saying, please click here and add this to your podcast player. I think it's worth trying different approaches. And also, you know, a lot of newsletter software, if you're using that to promote your podcast, you can do A-B tests where mm-hmm. you send one version to one group, another version to another group, and see which one gets the higher click-through rate.
Yeah. So outside of the lack of time, they didn't know that the show existed. There were a couple other reasons people hadn't listened to the show yet in this non-listener group. 9% of people said it just didn't grab me. And so that would be, they haven't listened yet. So it's not about the content, it's about the framing of the show, which I think is another important, this applies to all kinds of sales, but it's like there are different forms of value that most products or podcasts might give someone. And sometimes you need to try out some of these different angles to your audience and say to some people like, oh, it's this really data-driven focus where we break down the numbers and all this kind of stuff. And in a different newsletter or a different social post where you talk about another benefit that people can get from the show. And for us, we've got two show types. So maybe we advertise the roasts more. And you can kind of cycle through these different ways of talking about the show so that somebody who cares generally about your topic, something's going to hit with them potentially where they're like, oh, okay, I didn't get that that's what the show did, but now that I understand that, I am interested and I'm going to try it out. And so that's another reason why it takes so long to market anything is that there's not just one way to market it. There's going to be probably, hopefully, one dominant way where like for, you know, more than half of your audience, this is the thing that they're getting this benefit. It's doing this job for them. But there might be many other reasons that somebody might get value out of the show. And the more conversations you have with your audience, the more you're going to kind of find that stuff out. And you're going to see that people from your regular listeners will tell you things that you're like, oh, I didn't really realize that's what people got out of this. So another thing to think about when you're marketing to that audience that is into your topic, but has not yet listened to your show.
Yeah, I like the idea of maybe just continuing to experiment with positioning. Like, what are some hooks I haven't tried yet that might get some of these folks into the show? You could even do an episode where the whole framing is, this is a 15-minute episode, so it's totally approachable. The length is shorter. And this is an episode specifically designed to get people into the show. So if you haven't listened, listen to this one here. And maybe even you could even try some other things, like some hooks to say, like, you know, everybody who listens to the show, at the end, there's a contest or there's some payoff at the end that is a bigger hook to getting to try it out for the first time.
Yeah. So looking at some of the anecdotal responses here, a couple of interesting things here. We had, again, a couple of people who said, you know, this is on my list. I do want to listen, but I just don't have the time right now. This was one of the most telling responses where it said, sheepishly, I do have the time to listen because I could make the time. Something just hasn't pushed me to try it out yet, which would probably trigger a habit. And so I love the self-awareness of this person who's like, yeah, I know probably once I listen the first time, I would get a lot out of it. I like your other content and I would probably listen. And I think that this comment almost more than anything highlights probably where most of our audiences are at, where there's like something needs to break through. And once we can kind of open the floodgates, they're going to become a listener. Not everybody, but there's a lot of people there who like, they can't even tell you why they haven't listened yet, but there's just something that we just need to keep hammering away at it. And eventually we're going to break through.
And in some ways, to me, this is making me feel like we need to double down on the segment we have at the beginning of the show, because the segment at the beginning of each episode is kind of like the sales pitch for that episode.
Yep.
And I think if anything is going to kind of break through, it's doubling down on that. Here's the promise of the show. Here's the promise of the show. Yep. Here's what you're going to get out of this episode. Because it is kind of like chipping through a wall and then you eventually break through. And that doesn't always mean to stop doing what you're doing. Sometimes it means to double down on what you're doing. And eventually, as you're chipping away, you're going to break through that wall and get more listeners.
Yeah. And this is something a couple people did say this in each of the categories around. They gave us some advice saying like, let me know who this is relevant to and what I'm going to get out of this at the start of the episode. And I think that we've been a little bit guilty maybe of going a little bit too far in the open loop kind of hook creation.
Yeah.
And we've kind of neglected the, here's why we've opened this loop. So we've got some interesting, I think we've done a good job experimenting with some of our hooks that I think feel really interesting and pull you in. But there hasn't been that promise of like what you're going to get out of this. It opens the question without really hinting at the answer to it in some instances.
Yeah.
The other thing that came up a lot here, and I think that this is something with the non-listeners that I'm very pleased with some of the responses here. So a lot of people said, you know, I just don't have the time. I prefer to read newsletters where it's shorter and actionable. And same with the samplers, where for me, the responses around making it shorter and more actionable, to me, I'm like, I'm fine that these people don't listen to the podcast because they already are newsletter subscribers. And that's the job of the newsletter. The newsletter is designed to be a 2-minute read. And so that's meant to satisfy these people. I would love if they listen to the podcast as well, but if they have the time for this, I'm happy to engage with them there. And, you know, other people want the more nuanced, the more in-depth stuff. Maybe they don't like reading newsletters and they can come to the podcast. And so I think this is actually really affirming to me. It's like, oh, I've actually checked off both these bases where there are these two different camps, but actually I'm already serving them with the newsletter and then with the podcast. And so it's not about making the podcast do the same job that the newsletter is already doing. It's like, yeah, if you want that, you can get that. You actually already are getting that there. And for people who want more and a more nuanced, more organic discussion, then, you know, the podcast is for you. So to maybe wrap this up here, we've got all this data here, and now it's kind of like, you know, when you do a research project like this, it's great to get some information from your listeners or your potential listeners or your non-listeners. And then there's this like, okay, what do we do with this now? We've got a bunch of information. We've got some people who listen to the show regularly. Some people are sampling, some people who are not. When you look at this, what's your kind of order of operations of like, okay, here's how I'm going to start putting this into practice?
Yeah, there's just a few little tweaks, maybe changing the intro, like you mentioned. Maybe having better calls to action in our newsletters.
Yep.
I think doubling down on some things that where we haven't quite broken through the glass ceiling yet, but posting clips, posting video. I think with repetition, we would actually kind of break through that ceiling and maybe get a lot more listeners. And maybe finally just realizing that this is going to take some time, you know?
Yeah.
Like if I was going to start a restaurant, I'd be like, it's going to take 5 years for us to become known as the best spaghetti restaurant in town. And you and I are in, you know, the first 6 months of this.
Yeah.
So part of me is like, this is just going to take time. And if we really wanted to grow this show, we would be looking on a 2-3 year horizon instead of just saying, well, we've done it for 6 months. Where's our listeners?
Right. Yeah, I think the other thing for me, we've kind of talked a little bit about this already, is knowing who to pay attention to, essentially.
Yeah.
And so which feedback is worthwhile to acknowledge and which isn't. And I think you look at some of it, like the one, it was really interesting to me, that one about the clips at the start being unnecessarily slick and it feeling like more of an experiment. And I'm fine with that feedback because to me, one of the jobs of the show is to be an experiment. And that as somebody who teaches podcast marketing, I need something to practice on and that requires experimenting. And so this is going to be the thing. I think that there is even more that could be done there. And so you could look at that person's feedback and say, oh, we got to dial back the slickness or the experimentation. But to me, I'm saying like, actually, I think we need to ramp up the experimentation because I think that's what a lot of listeners actually appreciate. And a couple people did say, I really appreciated the experiment that you did elsewhere. And we could build out a whole additional premise of like, we run experiments and share them on the fly with the show. And so there's kind of this like knowing who to listen to. And I think part of that is knowing, especially this was an anonymous survey, so I don't know who any of these people are who gave the feedback. I think if you can get in touch with people and you can get a sense for, oh, this is the person I want more of, their feedback really matters to me. Whereas you talk to somebody else and you're like, this one's just somebody who I don't want an audience of 1,000 of these people. So I actually should do the opposite of what they say almost. And then there's this quote by Neil Gaiman. When people tell you something's wrong, they're almost always right. When they tell you exactly what they think is wrong and how to fix it, they're almost always wrong. And so this is, I think, one of the most important things to understand as a creator is that when somebody says it doesn't work for them, they're probably right. And they won't be able to explain it. They might try to explain, but you should discard everything that they say, their advice, what they should do. But you should fully acknowledge, like, if something's not landing, there's probably something wrong. And then you need to say, is this the person that I care about it landing with? And if so, then you're like, okay, well, now I got to get my creative hat on and I got to figure out if it's not landing for this person who I want it to be landing for, what do I think is the problem? What are my hypotheses and what experiments might I run to tweak that? So I think that that's, you know, this element of discernment that I've talked about a number of times here is like, it's one thing to do the data collection and the survey, and then it's another thing to parse it and tease it apart and try and figure out what is actually relevant to me in alignment both with my audience as well as the show that I want to make.
And to the point about who do you want to be attracting, normally, unless you've got a real like bad listenership that's super toxic, but normally you want to attract more of the listeners who are already fans. I was just at Podcast Movement Evolutions and Michael Osborne from Famous and Gravy, who we've mentioned a few times, came up to me. We had a great conversation. And then he said, can I give you some feedback on the show? And I said, absolutely. And he said, you respond too much that it depends. So for him, there was this thing that kept coming up where you would ask me something. I'd be like, well, it depends. And he's like, we know it depends. Like, just get to the point. And I take that kind of critical feedback. Here's a super fan of the show. He's shared the show. He's reviewed the show. I trust him as this is the kind of person we want to attract more of.
Yep.
And so when he says, you know, one thing that kind of turns me off is you keep saying it depends. That's awesome feedback.
Yep.
And you'll notice, Michael, I didn't say it depends once in this episode.
Yeah.
So I appreciated the feedback. But if it was like somebody who's like always super negative and they're like, you know, you should eliminate the vocal fry from your voice. Yep. I'd be like, oh, whatever. Like, I'm not listening to you. But somebody like Michael, I perk up. I'm like, oh, yeah, I want to know what folks like you think because I want more folks like you.
He sent me an email with the same advice and just kind of recapping the conversation that you had. And it made me think of a shortcoming that we never really defined who our audience was from the start. We both kind of just assumed we had these audiences of podcasters. And Michael is a very serious podcaster. He's won awards for his show. And that's not to say like I only want people who have achieved this amount, but he is a savvy guy. And we, I think the reason we have so many it depends is because we haven't actually defined what stage is our ideal listener at. Are they just starting out at which they do not have the context to know that it depends? Or are they at Michael's level where they've been doing this work? He works professionally in podcasting. He's done a show for many years. He knows, of course, it depends. Like, you know, you and I, anybody tells us any marketing advice and we're most likely to ignore it because it's like, yeah, for somebody that's true, but like there's so many, like it does depend on so many things. But if you have in mind that your audience is savvy and smart, you know that you can cut to the chase and not caveat everything that you're saying on the show.
Yeah, I like that idea. Like maybe if we were going to start the show all over again, we would say, okay, what level of savviness are we targeting here? And an underrated approach is targeting the people who are more serious.
Yep.
Because they are really willing to dig into a topic as opposed to folks that are just getting started. It's like going from zero to one, there's honestly not going to be that many survivors. The percentage of people that are going to make it through, and a lot of shows focus on zero to one.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. And it's always the zero to one is always there's more content options. Not all of them are always good, but it's the biggest audience. So the most people cater to them. Whereas the people who are more advanced almost never have anything that's actually relevant to them. And so it's going to be a smaller pool. But I like what you said, where they're more bought into it and they're willing to go more in depth with you. And when they find something that actually speaks to them, like they're going to be very quick to become super fans because there's just not that much on offer for them.
Yeah.
All right. So that wraps up the breakdown of this experiment. I'm actually going to publish the full survey results. They're all anonymized. And so if you want to go through some of the feedback that we got, I would highly encourage you to do that. And I'm going to include the link in the show notes to the Google Sheet with all of these results. And I think what you will find, if you look through this, you can probably assume that most of the reasons that applied for our listeners, either sampling or not listening to our show or continuing to come back to our show, will also apply to your show. So it's worth looking through some of these responses and kind of saying like, okay, this is the kind of thing that probably exists in any audience. What might my listeners be saying if I were to do a survey that asked the same questions here? And I'll also include a video walkthrough of how I set the survey up. So if you want to do something yourself, you can do that and replicate that. And I would really love to hear if anybody does this for themselves and we can kind of compare notes on what you find from your audience.